announcements as we get started this morning. This is our last lesson for this week, for this study, for part one of Genesis. Next week we'll start part two. Now, let me see if I can explain this. Next week, you'll bring your book. That is lesson one. It's an introduction next week. There are no homework for you to do in lesson one for next week. You're just going to come next week. I'm going to introduce the study to you. But in your old book, in your part one book, the very next page after our lesson, last lesson that we just had, I think it was lesson 10, is what's known as a wrap-up. Somebody look in their book and tell me what page the wrap-up's on. Sort of like a review of everything we studied in part one, chapter 1 through chapter 11. It's just on page 181. That's your homework for next week. That's what you will discuss in your small groups. And your small group leaders will be sending you out a text that just prompts you, do the wrap-up on page 181 and 182, and that's what you'll discuss in your small group. Then you'll come here, and I'm going to introduce part two, which is a study of covenant. Also, way back, I ordered 175 books, which is plenty for our group. They've been trickling in. We got a whole big group of books, and then four or five more came in. So if you didn't get a book today, you can pick it up next week. I'll have more books next week because we still have about 75 more books that are on their way. So don't panic. You don't even need it this week at home. Do bring your book back with you next week because I may use her. She has a handout for you to use as she goes through her introduction. Now, I haven't done mine yet. I don't know if mine will look like hers looks, but I may ask you to use that, but I may make a handout because, you know, I get nervous if I don't have a handout. By the way, look at today's handout. Oh, my goodness. I hope you ate your Wheaties this morning because you're going to need them. I was up last night at 10 o'clock still working on this.
I hope we don't have to fail.
You hope what? Oh, yes. Yes. Now, another thing I want you to jot down on your, just at the top of your handout, make a note of this. February 27th is a Thursday. On that day, our music minister, Nick Wolf, is going to be using our church for a big event that's going to start at 7:30 in the morning, 9:30 in the morning, go all the way to 7:30 at night. They're going to be using almost every room, this room, sanctuary. They're using everything except for the Family Life Center. And so we are not going to meet on that day, February 27th. So just you mark that date down. And now, what are we going to do that day, Teresa? Well, I'm so glad you asked, because that actually just happens to be the week before our garage sale. Woo-hoo. Yay! So, what you'll do, and this is executive order, you will get up and get dressed in your comfiest clothes and your tennis shoes, and you will meet me at the Family Life Center, and we're going to be working on the garage sale, and we're going to get it done that day, because look at this army of women. It will happen. So, that's the plan. All right, let's open with a word of prayer. And I hope we're not here the rest of the day. I'm going to try to talk fast. Our Father, we thank you. Thank you that your word is so beautiful. Your word answers every question. And we're going to have a lot of questions answered today in chapters 10 and chapters 11, 10 and 11. And God, I ask you to give us attentive hearts. We're going to need attentive hearts. We're going to need to focus this morning. So I pray you will just open our eyes and help us to get a grasp of what we're doing today. And I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. I'm going to have to take this off. It's getting hot. You don't know if it's hot or cold, right? So today we're coming to chapter 10, chapter 11. They go together. Chapter 10 is going to give us a big overview, and then we're going to go to chapter 11 and get some more details. It's kind of like when we studied in the, Genesis 1 and 2. Genesis 1 gave us the big overview, and then we came back the next week and we looked at Genesis 2 and we got details, right? So this morning, keep that in mind. Big picture first, come back, fill in the details. Chapter 10 is going to answer a lot of questions. Teresa, how did the world get from one man and three sons all the way to a world full of nations, a world full of different languages? How did that happen? And today we're going to understand how that happened. It was actually a miraculous thing that happened. I think this is one of the greatest miracles in the whole Bible. And we're going to be looking at it today. So this chapter is called, let's put this on our handout, The Table of the Nations. Now, did you get a map in your small group this morning? Okay, keep that map. On one side is the nations of chapter 10. If you flip it over, that is going to be the travel of Abraham. And so I want you to keep that map handy. You might just want to put it in your book, or if you have a notebook, put it in your notebook. I have more of them. They're on the back table, so before you leave today, you can get one. Okay, now, we're going to be following the line of human history, and we know it's going to come through three sons. What are their names? Shem, Ham, Japheth. Okay? Look on your handout. Here's Noah's family line. Started with Adam, then Seth, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, and Noah. In just six names, we get to Noah. And after the flood, the whole human race then is going to follow this line of Noah. Now, genealogies are so important right now. Everybody loves, doing their genealogies. And, you know, if we had the ability to go back and to go back and to go back and keep going back and keep going back, guess where we'd end up? Either Shem, Ham, or Japheth. Now, I think probably most of us in the room came from Japheth, because I know a lot of us are from European descent, and that's kind of where Japheth went. Chapter 10 is the only accurate genealogy of the sons of Noah. It's only here in the Bible. Who's writing this genealogy for us? Moses. Who's giving him the information? God. Now the list, let me say this on the front end as we go through the list. They're not exhaustive. We're not going to be real technical. It's a selective list. Not everybody's named here. Like we'll say, so-and-so had so many sons. But then we'll follow the line maybe with one son or maybe two sons. We don't follow everybody's line. So know that on the front end. It's not exhaustive. Not every family is going to be named in this genealogy. But it's still a very valid and a very legitimate record. But Moses is going to be selective when he writes. Now, the people he is writing about are going to be people that the children of Israel, who were wandering with him in the wilderness at this very time, they're going to know the people that he's talking about. And so that's another clue as to why he's selective. He's picking the people that Israel knows, okay? Teresa, what time period are we talking about now here? Because they're about to enter the land of Canaan, the people that Moses is writing this for, right? They're on the verge of entering the land of Canaan. What kind of time period are we talking about? Well, let's write it down. It's been 600 years since the flood. Now, get that in your mind. The flood happened. 600 years later, you find the children of Israel, and they're about to enter the land of Canaan. Now, what we are going to find is this, and it's really so sad. It's heartbreaking. The whole world's been destroyed by a flood because of the complete sin of the world. It was so bad. But you know what we're going to find out today? We're going to find out that life in the new world is no different than life in the old world before the flood. Isn't that sad? Did they learn anything? Doesn't seem so. Well, why doesn't God just drown them again? He should just drown them again. Why doesn't he? Can you tell me why? Okay. He made a covenant. He made a covenant with Noah, with his sons, and with everybody else. How long is that covenant going to be in place? As long as the earth remains. He didn't make it just with people. He also made it with who else? All living creatures. Isn't that interesting? God decided, I'm going to be gracious. I'm going to be patient. And instead of judging them, this is what God is going to do. He's going to send a people that are going to be a witness nation. He's going to give this particular group of people his law, the Holy Scriptures, his covenants, and his promises, and they are to be his witness nation, and they are to take those things to the world. Wow. Now, to help us go through this genealogy, let me help us just break it down in our minds. How many sons? Three. So this chapter is going to follow in three sections. First, we're going to look at Japheth, Ham, and Shem in chapter 10. And when we get to chapter 11, more details, we're going to come back to Shem. Because Shem is the one that the promised nation is going to come through. Each section is going to have three categories. The son will be listed. The descendants of the son will be listed. And then there will be a one-verse summary statement given for each son. That's kind of the outline of the chapter. Let's write this down. Verse 1 and verse 32 serve as brackets to this genealogy. Let's read verse 1. It says, now these are the records of the generations of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the sons of Noah. Verse 32 kind of brackets it, says similarly the same thing. These are the families of the sons of Noah. And in verse 32, according to their genealogies by their nations, and out of these the nations were separated on the earth after the flood. Now let me just say something here just to give you a feel for the timeline. Noah is going to live almost to the time of Abraham. He's just going to die right before Abraham is born. How long is Noah going to live after the flood? Can you tell me? How many years? 350 years. There will be several hundreds of years until the children of Israel form a nation. We're going to have Abraham. This is going to be like a couple of hundreds of years. And then the children of Abraham are going to go into Egypt. They're going to stay there for 400 years. And then they're going to come out and they're going to be in the wilderness. That's where they are right now. And then they'll enter the promised land. Let's go to verse 2. We're going to look at Japheth. The sons of Japheth were Gomer and Magog and Madai and Javan and Tubal and Meshech and Tyrus. I'm going to act like I know how to say these names. Y'all just go with me, okay? I'm going to act real confident. You're going to say, how does Teresa know all those names? So write this down. Japheth had seven sons. Now, Moses is going to take two of those sons. He's going to pull out Gomer. He's going to pull out Javan. And he's going to give us a further genealogy. Let's go to verse 3. The sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz and Riphath and Togarmah. Verse 4. The sons of Javan were Elasa and Tarshish, Kittim and Dodanim. Kittim, isn't that a cute name? And then we have the summary statement in verse 5. From these, the coastlands of the nations were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, into their nations. Now write this down. Japheth is going to become the father of what is known as the Indo, I-N-D-O, European nations. You see, Japheth is going to go north of Israel, and then he's going to spread east and west. Now, there's a prophecy concerning Japheth, and this is the fulfillment of that prophecy. His kingdom, his influence, the way he spreads, it's big. It's really big. And so the fulfillment of Noah's prophecy was this, that he would be enlarged. Put that on your handout. He's going to be enlarged. He's going to go cover a lot of territory. Now, if you study history, you'll find that the descendants of Japheth occupy most of the world's land. Western Europe, Eastern Europe, India, Russia, all the way down to the Americas, a huge portion of the earth is inhabited by Japheth's descendants. Let's go to Ham, verse 6. The sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. He had how many sons?
Four.
Write it down. Four sons. Those would have been Noah's grandsons. Then Moses is going to pick one of those sons and go a little further. We're going to go through Cush. Let's go to verse 7. These would have been Noah's great-grandsons. The sons of Cush were Seba, Havilah, and Sabta, and Rama, and Sabateka, or something like that. So Cush had six sons. Write that down. Then he's going to pull out one of those sons. His name is Rama. He's going to give us a couple of names of Cush's grandsons. Look at verse 7 and 8. And the sons of Rama were Sheba and Dedan. So write this down. Rama has two sons. These would be Noah's great, great, great grandsons, I think, or great, great grandsons. You should have seen me. I was trying to figure this out, and I had to write it down. Then he goes back to Cush. He backs up. Cush is whose son? Can you tell me? Who?
Ham.
We're going to go back to Cush. He's going to give us another son not mentioned with the other five in verse 7. This is a unique son. We're going to talk about him. Look at verse 8. Now Cush became the father of Nimrod. He became a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. Verse 10, the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. Now we're going to talk about Babel when we get to chapter 11. And Erech and Akkad and Calneh in the land of Shinar. From that land he went forth into Assyria. He built Nineveh, Rehoboth, Calah, and Rezin between Nineveh and Calah, that is a great city. Those were all in the line of Ham's son, Cush. Six sons, and then he mentions two of his grandsons. Now go to verse 13 and 14. And we see here, there are seven names associated in these verses to families, not individuals. Now, write this on your handout. When you see the suffix I-M or the suffix I-T-E at the end of a name, that is referring to a people group. So, for example, Canaan, becomes the father of who? The Canaanites. So Cush becomes the father of Nimrod, and then from Mizraim, see that I-M at the end, comes all the I-Ms that are listed here in verses 13 and 14. Let's read them. These are all people groups. Mizraim becomes the father of Ludan, and Anaim, and Lahabim, and Naphtuhim, and Pathrusim. I did practice these, but I forgot what I thought. And Calahim, from which came the Philistines. Stop right there. That would have been an important people group for the first listeners. They knew all about the Philistines, the children of Israel, right? And another group, back to verse 13. Good guess. Ketorium or something like that. Now, Cush, this son Cush, he is the Bible's name for the country Ethiopia. So put that on your handout. I'm trying to give you a feel. We're in the beginning of history. The nations are being formed. Now think about this. Here's Japheth. He goes north and then east and west. Here's Ham. He's going to go south. Okay? Put this on your handout. The person put. He is going to end up in northern Africa. And then Canaan, they're going to settle in the promised land. And all kinds of people come from Canaan. Some we've heard of in our study of the Bible. Go to verse 15. Canaan, now we're going to look at Canaan. He became the father of Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth. And now we're going to come to ITE people, the Ites. Let's look at them, the Ites people group. Verse 16. And the Jebusite, the Amorite, the Girgashite, the Hivite, the Arkite, the Sinite, the Arvadite, the Zemarite, and the Hamathite. I did pretty good there. And afterward, the families of the Canaanites were spread abroad. Verse 19, the territory of the Canaanite extended from Sidon as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza, as you go toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and Admah and Zeboam as far as Lasha. My goodness. Now you can just, when you get home, get your little map out and look that all up, okay? Now on a side note, let me say this. This is an interesting thing I learned this week. Most of the evidence connects the heritage of the Asian peoples in the world to be descendants of Ham. Many believe they came specifically, first of all, there are two kinds of thoughts. Some think they came from the Hittites and that empire, but they were a powerful people, the Hittites. They're still powerful at the time Solomon is living 1,000 years after Abraham. There are indications that the survivors of the Hittite empire fled into the area known as China. They went into China east of Turkey. They were moving, they were migrating on a route which is to become the very same route that Marco Polo is going to take when he opens a new era of commerce many centuries later. Now here's another thing. Some archaeologists say that the Hittites and the Mongols had very similar features. They wore shoes with the toes turned up. They wore their hair in a ponytail. They did pioneer work in smelting and casting iron. They were all involved in the domestication of horses. And that's one train of thought. Then another train of thought is this. No, they didn't come from the Hittites in Ham's genealogy. They came from the Sinites in Ham's genealogy, and that's another family in Ham's line. That prefix, S-I-N, on Sinites, is a common word in the Orient. There is a Sin dynasty there, and it means purebred. So there's kind of two veins of thought there, but most likely they came through Ham. Now, let's revisit this person, Nimrod, talk about him a little bit. Oh, he's interesting. He's so interesting. Look at verses 8 through 12 here. Let's write some things down. He's the son of Cush. Now, we're going back to Cush. Cush is Ham's son, right? You're with me. He's a mighty one on the earth. Write that down. That's what it says about him. And then it says this. He's not only regarded by humanity, the Lord takes notice of him because he's a mighty hunter before the Lord, right? Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. In other words, if you wanted to say some guy was really, really powerful, you'd say, oh, that guy, he's just like Nimrod. Nimrod is the poster boy for a bad dude. And the beginning of his kingdom is going to be this city, Babel. All right? And then he's going to go and have some more cities, Erech, Akkad, Calneh, all in the land of a beautiful plain here in the Middle East called the Plain of Shinar. He's going to build all these cities. Now, these verses come in this chapter, kind of just inserted in. They're like a little interlude. They're placed right in the middle of the genealogy. Look at verse 10. It says, the beginning of his kingdom. Now, that's the first time in the Bible you find the word kingdom. And the beginning kingdom was Babel. That city, Babel, will later become the city of Babylon. We're seeing Babel in the beginning. Turns to Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar and world power. Guess what? We're going to see in Revelation, at the very end of history, Babylon will be revived. I just thought I'd throw that in. So, Nimrod, write this down. He's the first king of the world's first empire. He was a mighty hunter. Now, when it says mighty hunter, that doesn't mean he got the biggest buck with the most points in the woods. That's not what is being said here. It means this. It means he was a mighty warrior. So write that down. A mighty warrior, a soldier. It means he was a killer of men. Now, this is Noah's great-grandson. Keep that in mind. This is Ham's grandson. This is Cush's son. It's hard to keep it all in mind. And he wielded deadly power in the world. He ruled ruthlessly. Right in the middle there of the Euphrates Valley, no doubt he conquered all kinds of people. He built great cities. He's going to build Babel. It's great in power. It's great in sin. It's great in idolatry. It's great in their defiance of the living God. This is the first real city in the New World. And it's built for man's glory, as we're going to find out in the next chapter. And then write down this. It's a preview of a later city to come, which I've already told you was Babylon. So Nimrod builds Babel. Nebuchadnezzar will build Babylon. And the Antichrist will build the final Babylon. Nimrod's name in Hebrew means this, rebel. That's what his name means. Then comes the summary statement in verse 20 about Ham. Let's read that together. These are the sons of Ham, according to their languages, by their lands, by their nation. Now that brings us to the person who's the main point of this genealogy, and it's Shem. Look at verse 21. And to Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, and the older brother of Japheth, he isn't listed last because he was the youngest. He's actually the oldest son. But he's listed last because that clears the path for the very next genealogy that's the most important genealogy in the Bible. And it's the genealogy that leads to Abraham. Because who is going to come through Abraham? Who? Jesus. Thank you. It also says in verse 21, Shem is the father of all the children of Eber. Now stop for a moment right there. This is the first reference to a word that we're going to use all the time. It's the word Hebrew. Eber turns into the word Hebrew. It's from Shem that the Semites come. Who are the Semites, the Semitic people? Who are they? They're the Jews. They're the sons of Eber. They're the sons of Hebrew. Go back to verse 22. The sons of Shem were Elam, Asher, Apashad, Lud, and Aram. These all settled in the Middle East. Now, how many sons does he have? He has five, so put them down. Now we're going to follow two of Shem's children. The first one we're going to look at in chapter 11 is Aram. So look at that. Verse 28. The sons of Aram were Uz. Stop right there and let me just tell you an interesting little side note. Guess who lived in Uz that we all know? And it's the man Job. We're going to get his story in the Bible, too. He was living in the land of Uz. And go back to verse 23. So the sons of Aram were Uz and Hul and Gether and Mash. So how many sons does he have? He has four. So put that down. And then we're going to see a genealogy of another one of Shem's son, and this one is named Arpachshad, I think. Verse 24, he became the father of Shelah. Now, Shelah was a man's name a long time ago. Shelah is Shem's grandson and Noah's great-grandson. Go back to verse 24. And Shelah became the father of Eber. And Eber was Shem's great-grandson, Noah's great-great-grandson. Verse 25, two sons were born to Eber. The name of one was Peleg. Write that on your handout. And then it says, for in his days the earth was divided. His brother's name is Joktan. Now let's see that note on Peleg. In fact, that is exactly what his name means, Peleg. It means divided. Divided. Peleg is named for the time when the judgment of God comes at Babel and God is going to divide all of the world. This gives us a note on the timeline of where we are in chapter 10. Where is God going to come down and divide the nations? Well, he's going to do it in the days of Peleg. That lets us know where we are in history here. Go to verse 26. Or is it 28? I can't see. I think it's 26. Joktan became the father of Almadad and somebody, Shevlef, and Hazramaveth, and Jera, and Hadoram, and Lizal, and Dikla, and Obal, and Abilael, and Sheba, and Ophir, and Havilah, and Jobas. All these were the sons of Jacob. He had 13 sons. He was busy. These would have been Shem's great-great-great-grandsons. Go to verse 30. Now, their settlement extended from Mesha as you go toward Sephar, the hill country of the east. Verse 31, these are the sons of Shem. This is the summary statement. According to their families, according to their languages, by their lands, according to their nations. Phew, thank you. Now, let's see what we've seen, bottom line. Write it down. There's 26 families listed from Shem. There are 30 listed from Ham. There are 14 listed from Japheth, and the total listed would be 70. That's just giving you a bottom line. Ham is going to settle to the south. He's going to settle in Africa, and he's going to go to Asia. Japheth is going to settle to the north, Europe, Persia, India. Shem is going to stay in the Middle East. He's going to be the Arabic nations. Now that brings us to chapter 11. Whew, I made it. I am sweating. This will let you know if you want to go to seminary. All right, let's jump into chapter 11 because these first 9 verses are packed. They're brief, but let me just tell you, they give us the only true record of the origin of the nations and the origin of languages. Now listen very carefully. Nations and languages essentially came into existence by a single act of God. Keep that in your mind. There is no evolution here. The Bible is the only accurate record of all of this, the only record for creation, for the flood, for the history from Adam to Noah, for the history from Noah to Abraham, which we're going to start next week. You and I, get it in your mind, we are studying the precise word of God, right? Now, it's not an extensive history. There's so much we don't know. It's not exhaustive. It's brief. It's selective. But I'm telling you this morning, it's true. And it's enough to make sense where we can see the general flow and the monumental events that punctuate the life of early man from Adam to Abraham. These first 9 verses are absolutely critical because they give us the event that launches the scattering of the people across the whole face of the earth. So when they came out of the ark, let's talk for a minute. How many were there? There were 8. And God said to them what? Be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth, right? They began to reproduce, but pretty much they all stayed together until this event that we're looking at happened. Let's read it. Verse 1. Now the whole world used the same language and the same words. It came about as they journeyed east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used brick for stone and they used tar for mortar. They said, come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name. Otherwise, we will be scattered across the face of the whole earth. Verse 5. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language, and this is what they began to do. And now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. And then God says this, come, let us go down. Who's that us referring to? Who? Same persons that he said, let us make man. Now he's saying, let us go down. He's returning to the Trinity. Let us go down and there confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. And therefore it was named Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth. Now, we just saw in chapter 10, this event happened in the days of Shem's grandson, Eber, and his son, Peleg. That's when this event happened. So, let's get a timeline here, and I want you to write it down. That puts this event occurring about 100 years after the flood, if you just look at the record in the genealogy, in just 100 years, the earth has gone so far away from God. There's still one tribe. They have one language, they're one nation, they're one family, and for the most part, they're all in rebellion and sin. And they say, let us do this. They've got plans for themselves. And we were talking in our small group, these are smart people. These are not cavemen. Do you know there's no such thing as cavemen? I mean, well, you know, they didn't start as cavemen. You know, man may have digressed into a caveman somewhere on the earth. But man is brilliant in the beginning, and they have ambitious plans. And their plans are directed at bringing glory to themselves and fulfilling themselves. So write this down. These people are in rebellion, and they have a spirit of personal ambition. They are prideful. Now remember, God had said, fill the earth. Take your people, fill the planet, populate the planet. That's not what they wanted to do. Staying together was an act of rebellion against God. Write this down. They all had the same language. They used the same words. They spoke the same. There was no barrier in their communication. There were no barriers to unity. The literal Hebrew here says this. They had one lip and one set of words. Write this down. They had the same history. And write this down. They all came from the same family. But there was a deadly dark side to their unity. Because they were sinful and because they were rebellious and they were proud and they were wicked. And that unity, write this down, allowed for a concentration of evil. And this was unacceptable to God. Sin had this united front, and God recognized this. And so God says this in verse 6. Look at it again. Behold, they're one people, same language. Nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible to them. No one was going to stop them. Now, part of the freedoms that you and I enjoy here in America, even today, is due to the fact that when Hitler wanted to rule the world, somebody stopped him, right? Somebody stopped him. And God's going to stop this. But if it's one people, one world system, one world leader, it's a powerful thing that no one can stop. And here's the deal. When sinners get concentrated under one power in one place, wickedness is going to abound. That's why there's more crime in big cities. What do people do? They move to the suburbs because they want to be safe. But there's more evil there. There's more potential for evil. And so God is going to scatter them. Now go back to verse 4. It says they journeyed east. They found this wonderful place called Shinar. They settled there. Now that's the key. They settled there. They're not about pioneering and filling the earth, are they? That is exactly what God did not want them to do. Let's settle here. This is the perfect place for us to build our world civilization. We're not going to scatter. This is rebellion against God. Now, we don't know how many people there are in the world at this time. There are going to be thousands and thousands and thousands of people. But they're all together, and of course, they had a leader. Who's their leader? We've already met him. His name is Nimrod. He's Noah's great-grandson. He's the mighty one on the earth in those days. He was powerful, ruthless, and he was deadly. He's leading an open rebellion against God. He's building a kingdom as fast as he can. He's pictured here as having this immense kingdom. And it's sort of centered in Babel, like Babel's the capital city of it. But it's a kingdom of rebellion, idolatry,
and pride. So write this down. Human enterprise becomes the theme of man as he builds this city and builds this kingdom. And so they make bricks, they build a city, they build a tower whose top will reach the heaven. We've got one city, one ruler, over one people, and they're all going to be now worshiping together in this one tower. Let me just say, apparently they were able to build and had amazing architectural skills, building construction skills. Now, let's talk about this curious tower. What's the point of this tower? We will build a tower whose top will reach into heaven. Let's write this down. This was their supposed connection to the gods. It simply means it was dedicated to the heavenly gods. They had already begun false worship of gods to replace the worship of the one true and living God. Now, this tower has a name in archaeology, and I want you to write it down. It's called a ziggurat. Ziggurat. Archaeologists have uncovered about 30 of them in this area. Now, write this down. In theory, it is a ladder by which the gods could descend and ascend and make connection with men. It was just like a stepladder. Sometimes they would put an idol at the very top of the highest point in the tower. And then generally, write this down, at the base they would build their temple. So the temple would be at the base, and then this tower would go up very high. There are many interesting thoughts about this. But many theologians say that this was probably the beginning of astrology. So put that in your hand, on your handout. The zodiac. And the zodiac and astrology, that's where you divide the sky into sections and you give meanings to each of the section of stars that are found there, and a person's destiny is to be determined by whatever sign he's born under. Do you know what sign you are? I bet you do. I'm Gemini. Bill's a Virgo. That's a lion. It really fits. And then it says this, they wanted to make a name for themselves. That indicates their pride, their self-will, their ugly rebellion. This is just their great ambition. Come, come, let us. And God steps in. And God is going to say, no, let us go down. And God moves into action. Now, there are no checks and balances here. And did you know that ultimate power corrupts ultimately, and God isn't going to allow it? So God says, let us go down. And then I told you a while ago that us implies the Trinity. So write that on your handout. The whole Trinity is involved. Let us go down. And we're going to confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's speech. It's a very effective way. If you want to create chaos on the world, this is a very effective way to create chaos. Now, I'm just thinking about this. That must have been so frightening to the people. Suddenly, you couldn't talk your language. And the person talking to you couldn't understand them. Can you imagine how panicked you would have been? And you're looking around, you're trying to find somebody who can understand you, and you find one, you find another. The ones that understand you start huddling together. And you form a group. It must have been a time of great anger, panic. The power of the world was shattered just like that. The city was immediately fragmented. False religion was splintered. Look at verse 8. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Did you notice who scattered them? God, write it down, God scattered them. And then write this down. This is a miraculous phenomenon. It doesn't say they scattered themselves. They separated into groups according to their languages, and God moved them out all over the face of the earth. I got to thinking about that. Did he allow them to go and pack their bags? How did he do this? Well, you know what? If he can move Philip suddenly to go see the Ethiopian eunuch, do y'all remember that story? I mean, Philip just wakes up and there he is in the desert with the Ethiopian eunuch. Well, hey, what you doing? Just like that. God's able to do it. This was a miracle. I'm telling you, it's a miracle. It doesn't say they packed their bags, they loaded, they traveled for days and weeks and months. No, no, no. God moved them miraculously. How did he do it? I have no idea, but I know he's able. I know he's able. And we just saw last chapter where they all went. Remember? Japheth goes north, Ham goes south, and Shem stays in the Middle East area. Now, here's another thing. They have different languages. The names of their gods change names. If you do a study of religion, you'll find, and I don't have it written down, but the name Ashtaroth becomes the name Semiramis in another language, and it becomes another name in another language. And all of this history of false religion goes to the world. They take their story of the flood to the world. Did you know you find the story of the flood in every culture in the world? How did it get there? Because how? You tell me how. God took them 100 years after the flood, miraculously put them somewhere in the world. They took their pride with them. They took their ambition with them. They took their human ingenuity with them. And the populations began to grow. And as they did, people became industrious. People became very clever. Nations began to develop. And I'm going to tell you what, ladies, it did not take millions and billions of years. It just took a few hundred years. Just a few generations, and the whole world was basically inhabited. And they developed. And they developed distinctive patterns of life. And they developed distinctive social customs, even biological features. And as they continued, they developed racial characteristics. I just wish you could hear Ken Ham talk about this. It's so interesting. Now, in verse 9, Moses is going to add a comment. Let's see what he says. Therefore, its name was Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth. Now, let's stop and review for just a minute. Phew. I've got 2 minutes. Let's review. The story of man, it's a story of sin. It's a story of rebellion. I think if there's one thing I've seen more than anything studying Genesis, is how deep our depravity is. How rebellious we are. But it's also a story of promise. Let's don't lose sight of that. And we're going to see that in Abraham. Now, who remembers the first promise that God gave in the Bible of a Savior? Where would I go? Genesis 3:15. This is right in the middle of God cursing the serpent. And right in the middle of it, he says that there will be a seed of a woman coming who is going to bruise you on the head. God gave that promise. Does God lie? No. And even though we see the world flourishing in paganism, so much so that God had to even drown the whole world, that promise is still in effect. God gave it to them even before Adam and Eve were driven out of the Garden of Eden. And so now the seed must come through who? Noah. And the seed must come through one of Noah's sons. Which son will it be? You tell me. Shem. Shem. Write it on your handout. The promised seed will come through Shem. The promised seed that was spoken of in Genesis 3:15. So here we are in chapter 11. We talked about Babel, and now we're going to go back and pick up Shem. And why would we pick up Shem? Because what is promised through Shem? The Messiah is promised through Shem. Go to verse, well, not yet. I want to say something about Abram's family before we get there. Abram's family, you know what? They were just idolaters. They were pagans. You know, why did God choose Abram? He's just out there living the life. He's just out there worshiping idols. In fact, they probably worshiped the gods of astrology that had been invented at Babel. They seem to have been especially involved in a cult of worshipers who worshiped the moon god. This genealogy follows a different son of Eber than in chapter 10. Now we're going to go to the son Peleg. He's in the line of Abram, and he is going to become the covenant line. And here we see God is sovereignly controlling and moving history. He's moving people. He's moving events. And he is going to fulfill his will. Now, let me say something before we get in it. Now I'm minus 1 minute. There's a lot of overlap here in the lives that we're going to be looking at. It isn't that one person dies and another person starts. No, there's going to be a lot of overlap. Real quickly, we're almost done. If you need to leave, slip out. Verse 10, these are the records of the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old. He became the father of Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. Verse 11, and Shem lived 500 years after he became the father of Arphaxad, and he had other sons and daughters. Write it down. Shem lives for 600 years. Then we're going to go with Arphaxad. Look at verse 12. He lived 35 years. He became the father of Shelah. And Arphaxad, by the way, we see that Shem is going to have his baby. How old is he? He's 100. And now we're seeing Arphaxad, he's going to have his baby. How old? 35. What are we seeing? What are we seeing? Life is decreasing here. Before it was, you live 900 years. Now we're going to see a decrease. Verse 13. And Arphaxad lived 403 years after he became the father of Shelah, and he had other sons. So he lived, write it down, a total of 438 years. Verse 14. Shelah lived 30 years. He became the son of Eber. And Shelah lived 403 years after he became the father of Eber. He had other sons and daughters. Shelah's going to live for 433 years. Verse 16, Eber lived 34 years. He became the father of Peleg. And Eber lived 430 years after he became the father of Peleg. He had other sons and daughters. He's going to live 464 years. Now remember, we said Peleg and Eber lived at the time of the scattering of Babel. Verse 18, Peleg lived 30 years, became the father of Reu, and Peleg lived 209 years after he became the father of Reu, and he had other sons and daughters. Poor old Peleg, he's only going to live for 239 years. His father's going to live to 464. That doesn't seem fair. Verse 20, Reu lived 32 years, became the father of Serug, and Reu lived 207 years after he became the father of Serug, and he had other sons and daughters. Write it down. He lives for 239 years. Serug lived 30 years, became the father of Nahor, and Serug lived 200 years after he became the father of Nahor. He had other sons and daughters. So he's going to live for 230 years. Write it down. That was Serug. That's a name, isn't it? Verse 24. Nahor lived 29 years, became the father of Terah. He must have been a teenage husband. Here's the key name that we're going to see. Nahor is Abram's grandfather. Now go back to verse 25. And Nahor lived 119 years after he became the father of Terah, and he had other sons and daughters. Nahor is only going to live 148 years. Now we're going to see another Nahor in verse 26 in a minute. That's a different Nahor. It's a descendant, probably named after him. Go to verse 26. Terah lived 75 years, became the father of three sons, Terah, Nahor, and Haran. Terah is Abram's father, and he begins the Abrahamic record. His name means moon. That's what his name, Terah. It means moon. Terah lived in Ur, U-R, Ur of the Chaldees. Now let me just tell you something about Ur. It's the major city, the major center, I mean, of the worship of the moon god. And Terah's name means moon. What does that tell you? He's a pagan. He worships the moon god. Verse 27. Now these are the records of the generations of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran became the father of Lot. And Haran died, verse 28, in the presence of his father, Terah in the land of his birth, in Ur of the Chaldees. Now, why mention Lot? Lot is Haran's son, but what happened to Haran? It must have been some tragic thing. He dies, and this is... So since he died, Lot's going to step up. And Lot will be treated almost as a son taking his place. All this is happening in Ur. Verse 29. Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. Abram's wife was Sarai, and Nahor's wife was Milcah, M-I-L-C-A-H. The daughter of Haran, this is a different Haran now, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Sarah means this, my princess. Sarah was a beautiful woman. We're going to see that as we get into the story. Milcah's name, she's named after a deity. And so what we're seeing, they're naming their children after the astrological Babylonian goddesses at this time. There's one very important problem that's going to play into our whole story, and it's very important. And we find out about it in verse 30. Sarah was barren. She had no child. In that day, that was the worst possible situation a woman could face. This is going to prove to be absolutely critical to the faith of Abraham. And this is what launches the story of Abraham. He's going to be an example of faith for all who will believe. She can't have a baby, and yet what is God going to come and say to Abraham? I'm going to make of you what? A great nation. Well, good luck with that. How are you going to do that? I don't have a baby. Verse 31. Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarah his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldees, in order to enter the land of Canaan, and they went as far as Haran, and they settled there. So they're leaving Ur, they're going to Haran. Why? We don't see exactly what happened. I want to show you why, and then we'll be done. Look at Acts 7:2, and this is Stephen preaching in Acts. Here's what he said. Hear me, brethren and fathers. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran, and said to him, where did he live before he lived in Haran? Where? In Ur. Remember? When is God going to appear to him? He's going to appear before he moves to Haran. So what does that mean? He appeared to him where? In Ur, are you with me? Or you're tired, I can tell. And what did God say? And said to him, leave your country, your relatives, come into the land that I will show you. Then he left the land of the Chaldeans, settled in Haran. From there, after his father died, God had him move to this country in which you are now living. Why did they even stop in Haran? If God said, go to this land, why stop and settle there? I'll tell you one reason that may very well explain it. Archaeologists tell us that Haran was the second chief center of the worship of the moon god. And then look at verse 31. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. And I'm going to tell you something. Terah died a pagan. And that's a really tragic story. And now begins the study of Abraham, girls, and the story of redemption. And we're going to start that next week. And we're out of time, so let me pray. Thank you for being such good listeners. This lesson was a test. A test. Marcia said she failed. Let's pray together, girls. Our Father, thank you. Oh my goodness, this is so much to digest. And yet I hope we've gotten just a bird's eye view of what you've done in history. God, you are sovereign. You are over everything. History is your story. We're just getting to read what you've written up until now. And it's thrilling to know these things. And we have tools where we can answer questions about why we believe what we believe. Because we can take our own Bibles and go right to Genesis. It is your word. It is true. And we thank you for it. God bless these ladies. Thank you for their attentiveness this morning. I just ask you to bring us all back next week as we study precious Abraham and Sarah. We're going to learn so much. We thank you for your covenants. Help us to be women who think covenant, who understand what your promises are. And we pray all of this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, I'll see you next week. Do your wrap up.